Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
All right, 20 years after the success of her first memoir, the New York Times bestseller, The Truth Is, Melissa Etheridge, the Grammy and Oscar award-winning rocker and trailblazing icon, takes stock of the intervening years, recounting the euphoric triumphs and the life-altering tragedies of her life. In her new book, Talking to My Angels, Melissa profoundly takes an honest look into her inner life as a woman, an artist, a mother, and a survivor. Her story is also being told in a limited Broadway engagement on stage called My Window, and to me, well, she's simply an ass-kicker, and Grammy and Academy Award-winning Melissa Etheridge joins me tonight. I think ass-kicker covers a lot of who you are, doesn't it?
I appreciate that. That might be one of my favorite descriptions. Thank you.
Awesome. Absolutely. Well, you know what? You wrote a memoir a couple of decades ago. How was the writing process for you for this book so many years later? I mean, you're a different person, evolved in so many ways.
Oh, everything's so different now. It was just the spirit of where it was coming from. You know, the first book was like, oh, this happened to me, and then this happened to me, and then and this is how I, you know, wrote the songs, and this is what this meant. And now it's the difference of looking at your life when you're 30 and when you're 60. It's really, you know, your life. There's some deeper meanings, deeper. Yeah. Stories, you know, to put in this book.
I know. I'm sure you look back at the first book when you were writing this one and said, well, okay. That's how I thought about it at that time. Now I see it a little bit differently, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's the way, even the way we think of our parents, you know, and when you're 30, you're still kind of blaming your parents for a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're 60, then you have a little bit more empathy for your parents because you're a parent yourself. And you realize, oh, wow, my parents were just human beings doing the best they could.
Yeah, it is about, there's a couple things. It's about doing your best and seeing it that way. And also the intention, you know, like, did somebody on your journey intend to do that? Or was it just, it was what it was because they didn't know any better, right?
Yeah, so much of that. I mean, the time changes so much.
How do you find writing like these books different from other mediums, writing music, writing for the theater, which you've done? Like what's different about this memoir?
Well, I think of them as like containers, and a song is about a 3 or 4 minute container of a moment, you know, and I have that space to craft with words and rhythm and music something that entertains, that can delight or move someone. And then I think of the Broadway show that I'm doing right now. That's 2 hours that I have to tell story, to sing, to, you know, move people. And there's a bit more crafting going on there because you have more time and you really want to, you know, build the moment. And then a book is like, oh gosh, you've got it. There's so much space there.
Right.
And you still have to, there's still stuff you know, I could go on for days, you know, so it's just this sort of space you have to craft the story in.
Well, you talk about, and I love so many parts of this book, but this is about changing your choices, which you wrote, which I like very much. You talk about how those changes changed your life, and that's pretty much how you've lived your life, right?
Yeah. As things have come along to me, as things unfold, I've realized things don't happen to me. They unfold for me, and then it's my choice how I perceive them. Mm-hmm. And each one is a step. I think I've learned now in my 60s to not be knocked over by things anymore, to understand that this is what shapes and leads me to ask for different things and bring in things in my life. So those changes, all changes are good.
And so different, as you said earlier, from your younger self. It's just a different, it's a different viewpoint on life and what you can do with those choices. I love that you just said that you just, things weren't happening to her, they were happening and presented for you to make those other choices, right?
Yeah, and once I really came to that sort of belief about how my life is, it helps with the stress so much. I think nowadays, I mean, I started realizing after cancer that while stress is, either I have a hold of it or it has a hold of me. And so to really know what stress does to me and my health and then to live and understand that I have choices in all of this.
Well, and you talk about those choices even early on in the book. You said when you were young, you know, you made the decision to use your mental energy only on creating music. What made you focus just on that at that time?
Well, it was the thought of, well, it was what was available to me at the time. You know, I started writing, and then that opened up the possibility of, I mean, I started playing music, and that opened the opportunity to write. And once I started writing, then the music became a vehicle for it. And I loved it. So I did it every day with this great love and excitement. And then it got better and better and better. And I just was like, ooh, let's see how far this can go. And I took it, you know, a large way. I went, yeah. You know, it went very large. And then, you know, just that, you realize it's not the end result that is the most satisfying, because the end result is like, oh, there it is. And then you kind of wake up the next day and move on. It's the journey. It's the fun in creating it and dreaming that dream and going, ooh, maybe I can write a book. Oh yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then you put it all there. Maybe I can do this on stage, and maybe I can present my life in an artistic way that can inspire and fill people up and you just go try to do it. And that's the fun part.
Well, I think it's no secret that when we talk about entertainers, you know, their best work comes out of life's challenges. So they say out of tragedy comes comedy, out of life's challenges comes great music. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the path, isn't it?
Yeah, I always say poor choices make great songs.
It's lovely. I love that. All right, I'm going to quote your book a little bit here because I love several things in here. The summer of 82, I drove west from Kansas to California on my own, determined to pull out all that came behind me, behind me, the burdens of my childhood, my attempts to be a so-called normal girl and date guys, my brief stint in Boston, and to chart a new life for myself. I had $300 in my wallet as I set out for L.A., a yellow hatchback, a Stevie Wonder run-in, determined to make it. And that just tells of such a cathartic time of not letting anything or anyone stand in your way, no matter what it took.
Yeah. And it wasn't like I had a lot of obstacles. Probably my biggest obstacle was my own fear. And, you know, once you just say, hey, I'm doing it no matter what, then you kind of, once you walk through a fear, you see that it dissipates and then you're on the road, you're doing it. And you just let it unfold in front of you every day. And, you know, it's easy for me to say now, but of course there were times I was like, what am I doing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no question. And speaking of writing this book, your love of reading wasn't books necessarily, it was poetry, which is a great path to write music.
Oh, completely. Oh, the poets. Sometimes someone will say, oh, you're a poet. I'm like, no, you don't understand. The poets do it without music. They do it with the rhythm of the words, the rhythm of syllables. They do it in a small, minute way, and you know, take an emotion and just paint it just through those words. And I have great respect for poetry.
But at some point in your childhood, and again, you love poetry, you gave up reading. Like, so what was that? Why did you give up reading? It's a great story.
Well, that was the I'm mad at my mom, so I gave up reading, because my mother used to, my mother was kind of distant. She had a hard time. As a lot of women back in the 60s and 70s, she was very, very intelligent, and today would have had up some sort of computer something. She was a hidden figures type. She used to work for a big financial company in the computer room when computers were as big as rooms, and she brought computer programming to the Army and, of course, was paid half as much and didn't get any of the credit. So she was a little cranky and frustrated, and I would come, she would come home at night, and she would make dinner barely, and then would sit and read just all night long, and it was like I couldn't talk to her. So I was like, well, I don't ever want to do that, so I'm not going to read.
Stubborn
then,
kid.
Then I went out in my 20s and went, oh, wait a minute, there's a lot of really amazing things to read.
I love that. I love that. Well, let me ask you this. So, you know, did you read to your children when they were little? I would assume so.
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. I loved reading to my kids. And every now and then, my teenagers will still ask me every now and then if I can read something when they need that sort of kind of comfort, and I'll read to them, and it's just it's a beautiful thing to do for somebody, is to read for them, and I read as long as I could to them every single night.
Let's say, what book most influenced you as your development as a musician? Do you remember, like, what book they were like, wow, this is really, was it poetry? Was it a story about another musician? Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the poets that really inspired me was Pablo Neruda. Mm-hmm. He was just beautiful, romantic poet. And I would say in my formulative songwriting years in my 20s, I would say it was J.D. Salinger and Vonnegut, Kurt Vonnegut. Those two were such interesting ways of writing that were sort of outside the normal storytelling that it inspired me to write where people could still reach it, but just make them reach up a little. That was always my goal.
We're talking to Melissa Etheridge. Her book is Talking to My Angels. Her Broadway play is My Window. There's more with her next on 720 WGN. Stay player, 720 WGN. We're talking to music icon Melissa Etheridge. You know, you mentioned in the memoir how an evening with a large amount of cannabis jump-started your spiritual awakening. How so? Explain that.
Well, I don't know if you've ever had a large amount, if you've ever done the edibles and found yourself overdosed.
Mm-hmm.
But I call it a heroic dose, because there are people that do it on purpose and really go out there and explore their consciousness. And it was the first time I was out of my own sort of solid three-dimensional consciousness and realize that there's much more in the world. There's much more of energy that we see. And it opened up the whole sort of esoteric landscape for me. And it's a journey that some people take and some people don't, and some people get there in many different ways. Mine was through plant medicine, through plant spirit, you know, through cannabis. I've since, you know, tried psilocybin and ayahuasca and a lot of different plant medicines. And for me, it's a wonderful way to find understanding, to find peace, to help with stress, to help just kind of cope with a lot of things.
Well, in a public life, and especially your public life, involves a lot of personal sacrifice and a complete loss of privacy. So how did that, becoming a more spiritual person, help ease the pain of all that?
Well, you start realizing that pain isn't caused by outside forces. Pain is the way that I'm looking at it. Pain is the way I'm thinking about it. And you start looking at things and going, well, you know what, this is there again for me, and it's not happening to me.
Well, plus there's got to be a lot of the spiritual nature of who you are probably helped you write this book. There's a lot of healing that's involved when you do something like that. So having that spiritual journey and experiencing that and living that every day only has to help, right?
Yeah, and it's one of the reasons I wanted to write the book. I wanted to maybe be an example or an inspiration to people who are maybe searching for something like that.
Here's an example, as I quote what you wrote in the book: when I see how much my own thoughts and emotions create my reality, create what's in front of me, there's real power in that, really speaks about who you are. And, you know, you've had to deal with some life issues and recovering from a great loss in your life, right?
Yeah, the sadness that you can feel as a parent. I lost my son when he was 21 about 3 years ago to an opioid addiction. And that really was the challenge, because I had sort of been walking this path of, okay, I'm creating my reality. You know, the better it gets, the better it gets, the more joy, you know, all those things. I was sort of walking, and yet I would see my son suffering, and it was quite a challenge. And when he finally overdosed, when he finally passed, you know, it got really dark there, and it really challenged me to either believe this or not. You know, am I going to let this be the thing that just destroys me and covers me up, and I can't show my face anymore because I'm going to take on the guilt and shame of, you know, my son and what could I have done for him and those sort of things? Or am I going to say, wow, you know, opioids are a big problem, and my son made his choices, and I did the best I could, and he's in a place of no pain now, and I do believe life is eternal. I do believe our life source is eternal, and we are all connected, and I find great comfort in that.
You wrote this, Awakening to Women's History and to the Ongoing Quest for Equal Rights, pushed my ability to believe in my own experience and trust my feelings in a way of seeing and being in the world. I began to apply this newfound insight to the legacy of all women to my music. I wanted my voice, my lyrics, and my music itself to ring with this emerging feminist awakening through my music. The combination of finding my stride as a working performer, becoming part of a supportive and thriving community of out and about lesbians were powerful forces in my development as an artist. That's one hell of a mission to take on, and it's a mission you've stayed true to.
Well, it's a personal thing. It's who I am. You know, I'm a woman, that's what I need. That's what I want to do, and there's a lot of us out there, and so especially, you know, lesbians, and it's just like, you know, let's just try to be the best we can be.
I was going to ask you about how you relax and escape, and I forgot. I read a very long time ago that you were deep into jigsaw puzzles. Is that where you, because that's all, yeah, I know, but you, it takes a lot. I have no patience for that. That takes a lot of patience, but that's where you find your zen.
Yeah. Oh, I love them. I have my puzzle tables like in the middle of my whole house, and I just, the world goes on around me, and I can just sit there and put that lovely landscape together. It's very, very zen.
And you're also a football fan, specifically the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeehaw.
Yeah, it's a good
time. I'm having a good time these last few years. I'm sorry about those Bears.
Yeah, thanks for the condolences. I appreciate that. But
I've been there. You have my sympathy.
Yeah. But it's a great time to be a fan of Patrick Mahomes. I mean, he's so good, and some big Super Bowl wins. So, you know, you stick it out until those moments happen, right?
Yes, you do. You do. I waited 50 years. I was right. Like, there you go. Here we go.
There we go. Melissa Etheridge, her book is Talking to My Angels. Her Broadway play is My Window. You know, another great read, Melissa. Great insight into your journey. And honestly, happy you shared it again with all the world.
Well, thank you very much.
All right. News is next here on 720 WGN.